Is it time for a podcast already?
Check 1-2, check 1-2, check 1-2, check 1-2. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
I didn't know that.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Garlic Jar Podcast Show. Happy Sunday, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Today, June 13th, 2021. Can't believe we're almost through like a halfway mark of the year here, you know. And I'm thinking like already in June. My God, we've had so many great episodes, so many great topics going along. And even for now, for today's episode, we stick here with our special guest that we had last week. Sean Kane's with us. This episode is going to be titled, I'm Not a Crook, which obviously covers the basis and the big topic in history of the Watergate scandal. So we're here with Sean. Sean's going to be with us in a couple minutes. But real quick, let me give some plugins and shout-outs here in the very beginning. Shout-outs to my friends over there at Falling Down the Rankings. It's a podcast that you can find out there on Spotify, Amazon, and other platforms. They do a hell of a job going through different pop culture topics of movies, music, anything in television. And of course, what they do is they just rank some moments. They rank some songs. They rank movie sequences or anything. Really cool stuff. Check them out. Give them a shout out. They're big friends of us over here at the Garlic Jar Podcast Show. And of course, one thing I'd also like to give a plug in with local businesses. You know, this week, we just stopped up there at Last Minute Brewing up in Scott Township. Over on Wimberly Hill Drive, or Wimberly Hill Road. It's a microbrewery. If you really like some of the dry, more hazy, more hoppy IPA-style beer, definitely give them a check out. They have some really cool beers featured for this summer, which is a good line of two IPAs, a stout. They actually have a kettle sour, which my wife was very excited about. So shout-outs to Last Minute Brewing, and thanks for those shirts. They're wicked cool, man. So, yeah, I'm here, and I'm joined with Sean Kane. Sean, can you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody. Great to be here again.
It's like we never left from last week, right?
No, we're back at it, buddy.
And I'll tell you what, I like the change here, the transition of time. You know, usually we're doing some of these podcast episodes in the nighttime hours. Not going to lie, I'm liking the afternoon delights here.
Yeah, me too, buddy.
You know? But I just wanted to kind of touch base, and I want you to kind of begin here. Where are we going to go with this topic? We're talking Watergate today. Do you want to kind of fill in everybody in what this topic's all about in history and why it's such a big part of pop culture in history?
Well, I think it's an important transition because I think, you know, the mistrust in government started with the Kennedy assassination, and then, of course, it continued with Martin Luther King and RFK's assassination, and then Watergate, and then, of course, Vietnam. And then Watergate just, you know, really, I think, put the fuel on the fire. I think that was the last, after Watergate, there was just no trust left. So that's why I think it's very important. And we're going a million different directions with Watergate. I mean, it's such a deep topic, but we're going to give it a shot today.
All right. Yeah, no, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, before we go into that, right, like, I was watching some videos and I said, hey, Sean, you know, I found some cool stuff that we could plug in for the introduction, obviously, that we just heard here before getting into it, so you'll get a little Easter egg of Nixon there. And then, not only that, though, but, you know, we were so intrigued by a lot of the information that we've gotten out of the JFK episodes and, of course, now most recently, the RFK episode. That literally got me to go right after that documentary that we were talking about. 2 days, right. Binged all four episodes of the series. And I'm not going to lie, that was probably one of the best documentaries that I watched probably in the last 6 months here, because I'm such a documentarian where it's like, oh, you know, I love watching this stuff. I love hearing stories of crime, investigation, conspiracy. And this was, I'm literally going to, you'll probably love this. This is probably about maybe a top 10 documentary that I watched over the past 10 years.
Oh, I agree. So, I agree. It was very well done. It was tremendous.
Yep. And one part of that documentary that I really want to touch on real quick and just kind of share with you in a personal aspect, you know, all throughout those episodes, like, you know, learning and just being educated of it, I think the one part that hit me the most was obviously when we go later into the series where it's more towards Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, where Congressman John Lewis,
yes,
his breakdown – And, you know, the admiration, the love, and the respect that he had towards the Kennedys.
Yes, and that's all of them, not just RFK, yep. but JFK, Teddy. I mean, he was right there in the fire with all of them. I mean, he was, you know, he was right there with Martin Luther King, and he campaigned for Bobby.
Yep. And his breakdown, like, the minute he started crying, like, because, I mean, that, you know, listen, a man is a strong person, you know, anybody.
Right.
A man, a woman, you know, you could keep your composure, you could keep your feel. And I mean that just by both men and women, you know, and to be hit that hard immediately by a topic, and for how long ago it happened, it still hits him to a core. You could feel how upset and how his heart breaks for it, you know? And, of course, I'm just kind of sharing the detail there. Listening to something like that, you know, getting that information from him and just feeling how he is, that literally, I was almost in tears watching him cry, you know?
And some of the other stuff, too, like with the sheriff, and we were talking off the air with that part with how RFK was defending the Latinos and stuff. Yep. That was just tremendous, too.
Pretty much just calling the sheriff out saying, yeah, so pretty much calling it out saying, yeah, you're unjustified. You have no justice or law-abiding information to say that it's justified.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, it's a good series. Let's give that a plug in too for this week. If anybody has not seen it, watch the Bobby Kennedy documentary on Netflix. It's a 4-part series, worth watching, worth the while. All right, and Sean, I'm going to let it go back over to you. So,
well, before we get into Watergate, I did want to touch on the video that you sent me on RFK.
Okay.
That was very good. That was on Paul Schrade. Paul Schrade was one of the victims that night. He was hit with the bullets.
Yep.
And yes, he did not think that Sirhan killed Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
So that was really good. Now he does think Sirhan shot him, but again, if somebody's pointing a gun at you, you know, he doesn't know that the is firing blanks. I mean, you know, you get hit with bullets and then you see this guy pointing a gun at you. But the important thing to remember is that, you know, he said there was no way that he could have shot Bobby Kennedy. Because remember, Rosie Greer, we talked about this.
Yeah.
Rosie Greer and this other guy, and I keep forgetting his name.
You're talking about the
big German guy.
The other guy in the kitchen?
Yes. And they grabbed Sirhan as soon as they heard, like, the gunfire. And as soon as he pulled a gun, really, they grabbed him.
Yep.
And they, you know, and that's why, you know, he says everybody said there were shots after that. So there was, like, no way that Sirhan killed Bobby Kennedy. We talked about the distance and it just wouldn't, you know. It was just not possible. But that was a very good video. And Paul Schrade's a very credible witness, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, he was there that night. And, you know, it's...
And he's also featured in that documentary that we just talked about.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Yep.
Yes.
You know, I think going back to that, if you're just touching base on that moment, you know, it's kind of funny because I do agree with that. I mean, after watching that video, I could definitely say, like, you know, listening to Paul's testimony and Paul's, you know, initiative of how he saw it and how he was hit, you know, I think I'm in the same boat with you. I think maybe his shot was actually the one that hit Paul and not Kennedy. And, you know, it just kind of keeps an eerie part in that documentary, too, because as they ended it, there was a lady in the kitchen and a lady that went by her saying something about, did we shoot him or something like that? Or there was
that was the girl in the polka dot dress.
The girl in the polka dot dress comes up, you know?
But you got to remember, though, Matt, the bullets that actually pulled out all the victims, including Paul Schrade.
Yeah.
They didn't match Sirhan's gun.
Yeah.
So he didn't hit Paul Schrade. Like, Paul Schrade, you know, I'm not going to get in an argument with the guy.
He
got shot that night, you know what I mean? But the thing is, the evidence proves that Sirhan didn't shoot him.
Yeah.
You know, but again, he's pointing a gun at him. I mean, I get it. But, yeah, what you're talking about, that was the girl in the polka dot dress.
Yep.
And she was seen with Sirhan and another guy, Michael Wayne, and then they went in and Sirhan didn't come out. The other two came out.
Yeah, there's something eerie about that. And, you know.
Yeah, and she was never identified. And like I said, you know, she was the Rockefeller and Dulles brought her into that mess. They brought in that Caliber Khan. They tried to say it was his daughter and it wasn't and all this other nonsense. But she was never identified and the police never really went after her.
Yep.
The witness that said that she, you know, she saw the main witness, that Sandra Serrano, they destroyed her.
Yeah.
You know, the two intelligence officers that ran the investigation, they destroyed her.
You know,
but that's a very good video.
No, it is. And something like that is just nothing more than it's funny business, a fogey mention. You know, like, it is. It's interesting at the same time. And you'd like to really know, like, where does that actually play part? You know, that's part of the conspiracy that nobody really knows about that part of the polka dot dress.
No, well, I mean, in Lisa P's book, she talks a lot about the hypnosis and stuff, and she thinks that the polka dots were actually a trigger to Sirhan.
Oh.
That they were like a target.
Like a target.
Like, and this
yep.
is why, you know, there was a code word. She kept talking about coffee and stuff like that. And you need more sugar with your coffee. And that was the trigger. And he's Toddy was back at the range, and he's firing blanks over there. And that's how it happened. But again, I can't do that justice. People got to read Lisa P's book, A Lie Too Big to Fail. She did the research on hypnosis and everything. And she does it really well. It's really well done.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
All right. Personally, because before you go into your set of questions, because I know you said you have some for us, but on that documentary, right? So you talk about a hypnosis. You know, I couldn't help to think when they did have Sirhan Sirhan on video.
Yes.
And they showed him in those couple moments. It looked like he was dazed and confused.
It did. I know. He was and a lot of the witnesses there, they said that. They said, like, his eyes were glazed, and he seemed like he was out of it, and he had a goofy grin on his face. Like, he just... And then, you know, go ahead.
No, my question is, do you really think that at that moment he was hypnotized?
You know what? I think the evidence... I think Lisa Pease presents a great case, and I think yes, I really do. And I know a lot of people think I'm crazy and this and that, but again... That explains how we got there. I mean, otherwise, I mean, how do you put him there firing blanks? I mean, it just, I really do. And you know, you got to read that book to really, she goes into such detail about it. And his lawyers down the road, not the ones that were the CIA appointed lawyers that basically didn't even present a case. But down the road, when they try to get him out, they did hypnotize him, and he was so susceptible to it. The experts that they brought in, they said they could not believe. But the thing is, he had no memory of that. They tried to bring out the memory, and the thing is, remember when I talked about them MK Ultra files? The CIA says right in the documents that they were able to replace real memories with false memories. Now, that might sound like science fiction to a lot of people, but this is a document right in the CIA files that says that they were able to do that. So... again, this is a 20-year mind control experiment that the CIA was doing. 20 years that we know about, you know?
I think I'm in agreement with you. I think there's a little hypnotizing feel there to that. So I'm going to agree with you. And I do want to pick this book up, too. So.
Oh, it's a great book. But think about this. Another thing, it makes more sense that he would be firing blanks. Like, you're not – to create a Manchurian candidate, which CIA was trying to do, it's just too risky because, again, bullets will be flying, and you have more than one shooter.
Sure.
You might have this guy shoot one of the shooters. So it makes more sense that if, you know, the shooter, which we talked about, is Eugene Thay and Caesar, he's in back of Bobby Kennedy. Sirhan's in front.
Right.
It makes no sense from a conspiracy view to have Sirhan firing – live rounds, especially if he's under hypnosis, because he could hit Eugene Thay and Caesar.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yep. So it makes more sense to have him firing blanks. He brings all the attention on himself, and it looks like an open and shut case. And then Caesar takes the headshot from behind, and that's it.
That's it. Yep. So I guess our next part, I mean, that's good. That's good follow-up to what we just talked about here. So where do we go with the questions? I know you...
Well, I got one question.
Okay.
And then if you want to do some later in the show, because I want to make sure we get Watergate.
Yeah.
Make sure we get everything in a Watergate. Yep. But this is a quick one because I think it's a good one, and it's the person wanted to remain anonymous. He didn't want his name broadcast. But his question was, when I brought up about the movies, I was bringing up JFK, and I brought up the movie The Post, and he wanted to know if I could go into a little bit more detail on why I think The Post was just a complete fiction and Tom Hanks, like, why I think, like, because I just think Tom Hanks really distorts history. Like, he's a talented guy, there's no doubt about that. I'm not questioning that, but when he does stuff on history, he really changes the narrative.
Fabricated
and
acting.
It's unbelievable. But the thing with The Post, I mean, you know, the whole thing is about the Pentagon Papers, and you call the movie The Post for the Washington Post, but it was the New York Times that they're the ones that were the first ones to release the documents. So how in the world do you call it The Post? And then the other thing is, They Daniel Ellsberg is the hero of the Pentagon Papers. He's the guy that leaked the Pentagon Papers. We talked about McNamara wrote them, but Ellsberg was an intelligence analyst working for the RAND Corporation, which was a CIA front, and he released the documents in New York Times to the New York Times. So Daniel Ellsberg is the hero of that whole story, and he is in the movie for literally like 5 minutes. Like, how in the world could you make a movie about the Pentagon Papers and have literally the most critical individual, the whole story, in it for 5 minutes? That's like making the movie Jaws, and you have the great white shark, the big poster with the great white shark,
right,
and he's coming up from the depths, and he's going to attack the surfer. and the great white shark is in the movie at the beginning for 5 minutes, and then the rest of the movie is about an orca to kill a whale.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it makes zero sense.
I was thinking giant saltwater crocodile, but...
It just... Well, whatever. I mean, you know what I mean. It's just... And then the other thing is, you know, they make... You know, instead of Van Ellsberg as the hero, they make Katharine Graham out to be the hero. And they get, of course, Meryl Streep, who's a fantastic actress.
Sure.
She plays her and blows it away, and she's great in it. But the thing is, Katharine Graham, to make her out to be the heroine of the story is unbelievable, because Katharine Graham supported the Vietnam War.
Right.
All through Lyndon Johnson's presidency. I mean, it's unbelievable that she was so outraged about the stuff that was going on in Vietnam. I mean, Lyndon Johnson, this is an exact quote from Lyndon Johnson. He said that Katharine Graham is worth more to him than 3 battalion units in Vietnam.
Huh.
Because he would actually have his advisors write up stuff that was complete lies and fabrication, how things are going great in Vietnam and this and that. And he would give it to Katharine Graham, and she would put her name to it and just verbatim print it out.
You know what?
And that's the feedback that they were getting. So how do you make her out to be a hero? Because she turned on Richard Nixon? I mean, it just makes no sense.
To me, I mean, you know, like, first off, I mean, because I don't know much about Katharine Graham. But again, I would like to know. I'd like to watch it. Maybe that's one movie I'll see if I could see. You're talking to the Post there, so I'll write that down. But one thing.
Yeah.
One thing is what you're saying there about, you know, how could you say that there's any good coming out of Vietnam? Nothing good came out of Vietnam. In my opinion, there was no success. That wasn't even a war. And everybody, and even to this day, knowing Vietnam veterans and everything like that, talking to people about the Vietnam War, that is such a touchy subject that there was never a good basis of going in there in the begin with. We didn't even know what the hell the initiative was in the begin with.
No, we didn't.
And
the thing is, you know, Johnson wanted to put that out there that things were going great, and he wanted to change the whole narrative. And Katharine Graham helped him with that, and that's a fact. Now, later on, sure, she turned on Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon starts bombing Laos and Cambodia and everything else. But how about what she did under Lyndon Johnson? And the thing about the Pentagon Papers, like McNamara, the interesting thing about it is, if you read the Pentagon Papers, you know, the CIA really, like, when the New York Times printed, even when the Post eventually prints it and everybody else, they leave out a lot of stuff on the CIA. They really blame a lot of it on the Johnson administration. And it was Johnson, but CIA was doing a lot of bad covert operations over there.
Oh, sure.
And they left that out. But, you know, very little of the Pentagon Papers, you know, touched on Richard Nixon. It was before that. It was, you know, because McNamara wasn't, he was an advisor. He left before Nixon took office, obviously. So he wasn't, you know, it was on Johnson. And the other thing is, there's a lot of people don't notice, but there's like 30 some pages of the Pentagon Papers on Kennedy's withdrawal policy in Vietnam, how he was pulling out the advisors and stuff. And it's interesting that the New York Times leaves that out. They never printed that, and neither did the Post and anybody else. They leave that completely out.
Of course.
You know?
Yep.
But, I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like, the blame really came down on Johnson. And the thing is, Katharine Graham backed Johnson the entire time. She supported him and the war. So where do you get off making her the heroine of the story? And where do you get off calling it the Post? I mean, it was the New York Times that broke the story.
Yeah.
And Daniel Ellsberg is the hero of that story. You know, he's the guy that, and we're going to touch on Ellsberg tonight because he ties to Watergate.
Sure.
He ties to Watergate. We're going to talk about that.
All right.
So we're ready to go. Do you have anything else before we get into Watergate?
No, I'd rather wait to the end here. I have another question for you, but let's save that flavor for later. Let's begin. Where do we start with the Watergate? Do we even consider it the Watergate scandal, or do we just call it Watergate?
Let's just call it Watergate.
Okay.
Because a lot of people think it's, you know, they think of Watergate and they think of that single burglary, and they don't understand, like, this was not about one burglary.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this was a series of events. Like Watergate, you know, is really about the years and years of a corrupt, paranoid president and dirty tricks by this corrupt, paranoid president and years and years of CIA black secret ops. And when those two things collided, what you had is you had a blood feud between Richard Nixon and Richard Helms at the CIA. And we talked about Helms. He is the guy that Dulles passed the torch to. And when these two guys collided, basically you had, you know, Richard Helms took out Richard Nixon in a silent coup. Because I'm going to present a lot of evidence that final burglary was botched on purpose. So Helms, instead of taking Nixon out with a bullet like he did, like his mentor Dulles did with Kennedy, he took him out in a silent coup, and he took the one thing from Nixon that was really more important to him than maybe even his own life, his legacy. You know, and I'm not defending Richard Nixon. He was a despicable individual. We're going to get into a lot of his dirty tricks, but
right.
I'm going to present where Helms and his boys laid a trap for Nixon, and he fell for it.
Okay.
You know, and the whole time, the ghost of Alan Dulles and the shadow of David Rockefeller is all over Watergate.
Of course, right? It just...
Yeah, of course. They're over everything.
Never get away from these names.
You don't.
God, what a plague.
You really don't. Every big event, like, you know, it's just, they're always there.
And I have...
Go ahead.
No, I have to say, every time that... Just as soon as you say Alan, there's no other last name that comes up in mind, but I know you're saying Dulles.
Well, the thing is, he was dead by the time Watergate hit, but his impact is still there.
Yep.
Because Richard Helms, and the thing is, Richard Helms and Richard Nixon were both creations of the same people.
Typical.
You know, obviously, Helms is created by, you know, Dulles Rockefeller, and the same thing with Richard Nixon. He portrays himself as the son of a grocer in Northern California and this and that, but he was a creation of Dulles Rockefeller and Prescott Bush. George Bush's father.
Yeah.
And they created him, you know? So, I mean, for him to say, and there's a lot of interesting things with Nixon. I don't know if you realize that Jack Ruby worked for Nixon.
No, I never.
Did you realize? There's documentation to prove that. There's actually a picture of Nixon, Ruby, and Prescott Bush that surfaced. But there's documentation. Like, Ruby was kind of like a fixer. We talked about that. He worked from everybody from the CIA to the mob to politicians to the Dallas Police Department. I mean,
Ruby had his hands in so much.
Oh, he was into everything. He was just into everything. But, yeah, 1947, 48, he worked in Nixon campaign, and there's documentation to prove that.
I never knew that. I mean, am I shocked? No. Am I surprised? No. But but it's that point where it's like, if you told me, like, again, that's just another part where it's like, okay, typical, of course. Yep. A name like that gets dropped and it's in connection to who we're talking about today.
Right.
Doesn't surprise me.
I'm not suggesting that Nixon had anything to do with Kennedy's assassination, because I don't think he did, but I think he definitely knows who did it. And we're going to talk about that tonight, because I think he mentions something very interesting about it. And because, again, remember, he's involved in the same people that Richard Helms is, and, you know, he's involved with Dulles and Rockefeller. So it's same thing like Johnson. Like, they might not have been involved, but they know who did it.
You know, I'm going to use your Apex Predator reference here back to Jaws, you know. So are you telling me that Richard Nixon actually dropped some chum in the water for this shark to bite?
Well, I mean, we're going to get into that.
Oh,
we're
man.
Gonna get into, right. We're going to get into right. a lot right. of Nixon. We're going to really, and we're going to tell some interesting stories on Nixon tonight.
Right.
I mean, we're really.
Let's do it.
There's a lot to him. So let's start with the official story.
Go for
so
it.
Everybody knows the official story on Watergate. So basically, the system worked is the official story. You know, you had this corrupt president, and you had, you know, people associated with him that worked for him. They broke into the Democratic headquarters. They got caught. Nixon tried to cover it up. And then these two young reporters from the Post, Woodward and Bernstein, they gather all the evidence. They break the story. They use this secret informant that they call Deep Throat, which later would be revealed as Mark Felt, the assistant director at the FBI. And you know, the system worked. Everybody, well, I mean, Nixon's forced to resign. Everybody associated with him went to jail. And that's the whole story. But, you know, that's as many other things, you know, with history, we learn that's the official story really isn't the whole story. And sometimes it's not even the correct story.
Hmm.
So let's start with the plumbers unit, because that's what, you know, the Watergate burglars were. They were called the plumbers unit. They were started by Richard Nixon, and they were in there to plug leaks. And what they were doing is they were there to discredit Daniel Ellsberg. And I know Tom Hanks don't think Ellsberg is that important to history, but they were there to discredit Ellsberg. And the thing is, you know, it's interesting. Johnson was so wrapped up in the Vietnam that, you know, like I said, the Pentagon Papers didn't even focus on Nixon. It was all on Johnson, but yet he was out to get you know, Ellsberg. And, you know, they're one of the burglaries, because there was, I want to say there were six or seven successful burglaries that we know about before the one that got They got captured.
Okay.
But they did, one of them that was successful, and they had the pictures they confiscated later, was Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist. They broke into a psychiatrist. They were trying to get files on him. So, you know, that was one of the main things. They wanted to plug the leaks coming out. How was all this information getting out of Vietnam? And then also the Plumbers Unit was designed to go after Nixon's enemies. And one of his enemies at the time was Teddy Kennedy. And they got a lot of information. They were attacking Teddy Kennedy. And the whole thing with the Plumbers Unit, it was persuaded by Henry Kissinger, who we talked about before, and Charles Colson. They were the two guys that kind of persuaded Nixon to start this Plumbers Unit. And the chief of the Plumbers Unit was a young man lawyer by the name of David Young, who was a mentor of Nelson Rockefeller. He was mentored by Nelson Rockefeller, who, of course, is David Rockefeller's brother. So we talked about David's shadow is always there over everything. So David Young is the, you know, he's the head of the Plumbers Unit. And Charles Colson was a classmate of E. Howard Hunt. And we're going to talk about E. Howard Hunt tonight quite a bit, because E. Howard Hunt is like the American James Bond. I mean, he's involved in, and Matt, you watch all the UFO stuff, and Hunt's name always comes up in the UFO.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Hunt is just, I mean, he's just, his career, and I don't know if you ever seen anything by his son, St. John Hunt,
but he has
some interesting stories. I mean, he really, I mean, it's not like, you know, being the son of a normal guy, goes to job, 9-to-5 job. I mean, Hunt is just, like I said, he's the American James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, but I really think that we're gonna present evidence that, you know, this whole thing was hijacked by Helms, the whole Plumbers Unit, and Colson eventually brings in E. Howard Hunt. He brings them in because they went to school,
right?
And the first thing they did, this is interesting, like this shows you what they're all about. The first thing that Hunt and Colson did is they met with a CIA operative by the name of Lucien Conine, okay, and they were trying to get up disinformation on JFK, that he approved the assassination of ZM and his brother in Vietnam, and they're trying to smear JFK, who's already been dead for almost a decade. So this is like unbelievable. You know, here they are again.
We're talking almost. This
This is the dirty tricks, and was that directed by Helms or Nixon? Who knows? But I mean, this is what these guys were doing. You know, and originally Helms was against setting up this unit because, like I said, he a lot of the stuff about the CIA was left out of the Pentagon Papers, so he really didn't want to go after Ellsberg. But eventually, I think he just, when Nixon goes to this, I think he eventually hijacked the whole thing, you know?
Well, I question the legitimacy of it, too, because if we're talking the past 10 years here, mentioning JFK has been already dead now almost 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, even just go back to the events. I mean, first off, for me to know about these topics and to learn about them, you know, contents and credibility are very, and in my opinion, I'm just sorry, I want everybody to know this, and when you look at the JFK, and we're talking right now up into Watergate, credibility and contents are very questionable at this point. I don't believe the legitimacy of it, because there's so much conspiracy around it, and that's how I'm always going to feel about these topics. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you. So then 3 months after the Plumbers Unit's formed, Jim McCord, at CIA, he signs on as this security director of CREEP, which is the committee to reelect the president, which is Nixon. And I can't think of a better name of a committee
creep.
Than the CREEP to describe Richard Nixon. You know, I mean, it's just great. But I mean, McCord, we're going to go into some of these guys, but McCord is just unbelievable. I mean, he was in the Office of Security. I mean, he's the guy that actually designed all of the security for the buildings of the CIA. I mean, it's including the farm.
Yeah.
You know, the secret base. I mean, this is a guy that probably had a design in Area 51. It wouldn't surprise me. And this is how deep this guy was into to the Office of Security.
Now you get me interested with that, with Area 51.
Oh, it's just, I mean, you know, it's, well, I mean, their names always come up.
Sure.
You always hear
.
Hunt, Dulles. I mean, Angleton's name always comes up with the UFO stuff. I mean,
of course.
But again, you know, the thing is, here's the thing, and this is why I said at the beginning, I said that I think the last burglary was sabotaged on purpose by McCord, and at least definitely by McCord, maybe even by E. Howard Hunt,
mm-hmm.
because these guys do not make mistakes.
Okay.
unless they do it on purpose. Because when they set up this team, this is a dream team of black operators. I mean, you were talking about it. These are a bunch of guys that could – they would go into to Russia and sneak into Putin's office and take some from pictures from his secret files in his safe – and he wouldn't even know they were there. That's how good these guys were.
I like the common day reference, the modern day reference. Yep.
Yes, I mean this is a dream team of black operators.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, when we're gonna go through them and list how their ties to the CIA. And it's funny how you know this term ex-CIA comes up. I mean, it drives me crazy because it's not a country club where you pay by the month. I mean, once you're in, you know what I mean? Like you're in. It's like joining the mafia. It's like joining the Israeli Mossad. I mean, you don't just quit. You know what I mean? It's like you're part of the intelligence community.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and the thing is, like, and when I'm going to get into it, I'm going to get into where these guys were under the Office of Security under something that's called the Confidential Correspondence Group, which basically was where they would say these guys were ex-CIA or ex-FBI or something, but they really weren't.
Yeah.
They were still on their payroll, but they're buried so deep into the intelligence funding and stuff that they pretty much don't exist. It's like the old saying about the NSA, you know, it stands for no such agency.
Yep.
Because, you know, they're just so deep cover.
Sure.
You know, but but we're going to get into a little bit about the burglary and how I think it was fake. But just one interesting thing on, because I always say that the shadow of Rockefeller is always there. But one of the interesting things about Watergate, and we're going to ask a lot of a lot of questions that aren't going to be answered. But one of the things is, a lot of people don't realize that the Federal Reserve had an office in the Watergate Hotel.
Yes, they did.
Which is very interesting. And the thing is, there's a story by one of the Cubans later on that was involved, one of the burglars. I forget which one it was, but he said that Jim McCord took something from O'Brien's safe in the Democratic National Convention. This was on one of the successful burglaries now. And they took something from the safe, and he brought it up to the seventh floor where the Federal Reserve was. And when the Cuban went up there, McCord was coming out of the office, and he didn't have that folder that he took out of the safe with him. So whatever he brought up, he left into the Federal Reserve office. And he was talking, the Federal Reserve had their own, because we talked about the Federal Reserve. They're like a country to itself. They had their own security up there and everything. And McCord was talking to the officers on that floor, and he was very friendly with them. So that's just an interesting side story. You know, about the ghost of Rockefeller.
Yeah.
I mean, what the heck was in that safe O'Brien had that McCord brought up to the Federal Reserve?
Big question mark there.
Big question mark. But let's get into some of the burglars. So we already talked about Jim McCord. We talked about E. Howard Hunt.
Yep.
I mean, you know, just a little bit more. Like E. Howard Hunt, you know, he was trained by Alan Dulles. He actually worked for Alan Dulles, I think, a year in his personal office. And he was involved in so many operations. I mean, he's in Guatemala, he's in Cuba, he's all over the place. And he was really close to Richard Helms, mm-hmm. very close to Richard Helms. And Jim McCord, I mean, like I said, he was under the Office of Security. He was in charge of security for all the buildings. And an interesting story about McCord, we talk about the power that these guys have, right? Well, it came out, I want to say 2019, that Jim McCord died. And then people start looking into it. And he actually died in like almost 2 years before that, in like 2017. And whatever reason, the powers to be didn't want to let that out, and they kept that secret that he was dead for like 2 years. Now think about the power to do that in this day and age. It is social media, and you know yourself that if somebody who had, say he had 5 minutes of fame 25 years ago,
right.
If he dies today, at least for part of the news day, he's going to be plastered all over the news.
Oh, sure.
That he died. So this is Jim McCord, who's a key figure in Watergate, and he passes away, and you know, they hold this secret for 2 years. It's absolutely incredible.
Interesting.
But then some of the other burglars. So we had Eugenio Martinez, who was a CIA contract agent. He worked on a lot of missions. He was involved in the plots to kill Fidel Castro. He was there at the Bay of Pigs. We have Bernard Barker, who was a CIA Cuban exile, anti-Castro Cuban. He was a finance guy, and he was a safecracker. That was his skills, but he was heavily involved in the anti-Castro stuff. And then we had Frank Sturgis. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with that name, because
yep.
His name comes up at every conspiracy. I mean, but Frank Sturgis was a CIA contract agent, and he was close to E. Howard Hunt. And he was also involved in a group called Interpen, which they were basically mercenaries.
Yep.
But Sturgis is just, I mean, he, you know, a lot of people put him as the guy that took the headshot on Kennedy, that he was the guy in the grassy knoll. No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Yep.
Yeah, his name comes up, and he's involved in a lot of things, but he was really involved. His job was really disinformation, because we talked about Gaetan Fonzie when he was investigating the Kennedy assassination for the House Select Committee.
Yeah.
He talked to Sturgis a lot, and Sturgis would send him down a lot of dead alleys, you know, and he would send him on wild goose chases and steer him down and try to steer him towards the what they were pushing, that the Cubans and the Russians killed Kennedy, you know, and that was Sturgis' job. As far as him being in Dallas, I mean, I have my doubts about it. I mean, he may have been, but I don't think he was the guy in the grassy knoll.
No, but you know what, though? It's funny that you mentioned that, because, I mean, I'm sure people have seen it through reading and maybe other, you know, websites, articles that people put up, but that's one thing that I've come across quite a bit, you know, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, not too long ago, I saw that there was an educational article posted where I don't know if it was just maybe an article because it was just, you know, because the history coming around, it was around JFK time, you know, an anniversary. But I do remember where the question was in the article, you know, where it was convinced, were E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis part of the assassination of JFK?
Well, the thing is that came from a lady by the name of Marita Lorenz.
Yeah, because Frank Sturgis wasn't an agent of the CIA, right? He wasn't.
He was a contract agent. He was not official agent. He was
right.
He was one of those guys that I just talked about, like a Robert Mayhew. He's buried so deep in the Office of Security, and you know what I mean? Like the confidential correspondent group that I just mentioned, that's what Sturgis would be. Like, they're buried so deep where, on the surface, no, they don't look like they're CIA.
Like a goddamn tick. You know?
But that was Marita. Marita Lorenz was a girlfriend of Fidel Castro.
Yep.
And she, eventually the CIA flipped her and got her involved trying to assassinate Fidel. But she's the one that said that Hunt and Sturgis were in Dallas, and there was money passed, that Sturgis was there with the Cubans that I just mentioned.
Right.
Actually, Eugenio Martinez was one of them she mentioned. He was one of the burglars at Watergate. But she said that they had guns and stuff, and Hunt came, and he started passing money out, and then she left, and they went on their way to Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I there's no doubt, like, Hunt's involvement. I have no doubt that he was involved. I just don't know if I believe that story of Marita Lorenz, because she's been caught in some other lies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, once a person lies, it's hard to believe them on something else.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you're following the spider webs there, you know?
Yeah, but then, but Sturgis, we could talk about him all day. I mean, he's involved in everything. But another one of them was Virgilio Gonzalez, who was another Cuban exile. And if you remember, we mentioned him in the Chicago plot to kill Kennedy, because his name came up. He was tied to that shady Sierra Martinez, mm-hmm. that Alan Dulles and General Lucius Clay met with the summer before the assassination. So, you know, all these guys have ties. I mean, like I said, these guys are all black operators. Whether they're officially CIA or not, they're deep, you know, intelligence assets of the community, and they all have tremendous resumes. So, like I said, this is a dream team set up, you know, the plumbers unit.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are not, you know, like they said, a second-rate burglary. I mean, these guys are top of the line. So I just have a hard time, you know, believing the fact that they got caught by mall security, basically. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, how in the world, you know, and you know, let's get into some of the actual burglary that got botched.
Go for it.
So what happened was McCord left the tape on the doors when they broke into the different offices, and he left it. And that's a rookie mistake. I mean, that's, you know, that's something Jim McCord does not do. And the other thing is, they had a guy by the name of Baldwin. I think his name was Alfred Baldwin. He's an ex-FBI guy. And he was a lookout guy. He was in the Howard Johnson across the street from the Watergate Hotel. And he was the lookout guy. And when he saw the police, because when the security came in and he saw the tape on the doors, mm-hmm. they called the cops. So the cops show up. And here's Baldwin across the street. And he's radioing to the other guys on the walkie-talkie, get out, get out. And the thing is, McCord instructed all the burglars inside to turn the recorders off, to turn the walkie-talkies off.
Right.
So that's another rookie mistake, you know, that Jim McCord just doesn't make, you know?
Okay.
So, and then the other thing is, you know, Bob Woodward, and I know a lot of people, you know, with Bob Woodward, you know, he's a great journalist and everything, and he, you know, him, Woodward and Bernstein broke the case. But the one thing about Woodward that people don't know is he wasn't this young guy who was really connected to nothing when this story broke. He has an extensive intelligence background, you know. So the thing about it is, like, I'm not suggesting that Woodward was, you know, involved in anything like that. I'm suggesting, though, as a journalist, he's going to use those intelligence assets that he has and connections that he has to find out more about the case. So I really believe that this is where Helms could have, you know, redirected some of the evidence and really changed the narrative and gave him some false intelligence going the other way. And this is where I think it was manipulated by Helms.
Interesting.
And now we're really going to get into some of the very interesting things that came up. First thing is, I don't know if you're aware of the E. Howard Hunt.
E. Howard Hunt, yep.
His wife, who was a CIA asset, she ended up dying in a plane crash.
Wow.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is when, so what happens is, you know, after everything gets settled, Nixon resigns, everybody goes to jail. You know, all his guys, Mitchell, Colson, they all go to jail, except Nixon, of course. And the thing is, Jim McCord only gets 3 months, and he's out.
Sounds like a slap on the wrist.
Slap on the wrist. And E. Howard Hunt gets a little bit more. He gets a couple years, so Hunt is really pissed. So if Hunt really was in with McCord as far as botching his burglary, he's really pissed that he gets sent to prison for a couple years.
Sure.
So anyway, he blackmails Nixon from prison. He says he wants money, and or he's going to start talking. So this is where the interesting quotes come in from Richard Nixon. And I'm sure you're aware, Matt, of the recordings that Nixon made.
Absolutely.
in the 18 missing minutes.
Yep.
Well, this is very interesting because who knows what's on those 18 minutes. I mean, I'm not even going to speculate.
Oh, we don't know.
You have no
idea.
It's
like taking out the 30 pages of the report.
Yes.
The Pentagon Papers.
But here's the thing. When Hunt, you know, blackmails Nixon, and here's Nixon's quote. This is that quote from the recordings. He says, "This fellow Hunt, he knows too damn much. If it gets out that this Cuba thing is all involved, it would be a fiasco. It would make the CIA look really bad. Hunt would look bad. And it's likely to blow the whole Bay of Pigs thing, which we think would be very unfortunate for the CIA and the country at this time." Now, here's the thing. What is he talking about, the Bay of Pigs? And this is where one of Nixon's chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, he said that when Nixon right there, he's using the code word as the Bay of Pigs for the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
So when he's saying, you know, we're going to blow the whole Bay of Pigs thing off, he's saying we're going to blow the whole Kennedy assassination off and make the CIA look bad.
Yeah.
And he's sending a message to Richard Helms. He's sending a message to Helms that, hey, you better get involved and start disrupting this investigation, or I'm going to tell your big secret about how you guys took out Kennedy. And Haldeman really believed that, and I kind of believe it too, because you think about, why would Nixon say the Bay of Pigs? Why would anybody care about the Bay of Pigs, you know, that many years later when everybody knows what happened at the Bay of Pigs?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And why, you know, it make the CIA look bad. They already look bad. Everybody knows what happened to the Bay of Pigs. So I really think that was a code name for something else, and I think it was for the Kennedy assassination.
Call out.
Yeah. So then the whole thing is that, you know, so Dorothy Hunt, H.L. Hunt's wife, she was on a plane, and actually she supposedly had the money that she was delivering, the hush money, and according to Jim McCord, the whole thing was organized by Nixon's Attorney General John Mitchell, and of course the plane crashes. And the interesting thing about the plane crash, in Hunt's son, I always thought that, you know, it was a target of plane crash, like it wasn't, because he looked into it a lot, and there was a lot of activity on the ground, like 20 minutes before the plane even crashed, as far as like SUVs and stuff, like government SUVs that were at the scene of the crash before the plane even crashed.
Right.
And that's from the locals that talked about it. So there was a lot of talk about, you know, what actually happened there to Hunt's wife. But it was just interesting how, you know, he tried to blackmail Nixon.
Interesting.
And another interesting story that ties Nixon to the RFK assassination in a way that I kind of left out in the last episode. When we talked about John Meyer, remember John Meyer was the guy that, that worked for Robert Mayhew and Howard Hughes?
Yeah.
And he thought that Mayhew was involved, so he took the evidence to J. Edgar Hoover.
Right.
Well, one of the things is he said that later on, after Bobby Kennedy had passed, like the next day, he was at a dinner with Robert Mayhew and Don Nixon, Richard Nixon's brother, who you don't hear much about. And they embraced in a big hug, and Mayhew said something to him. He said, the son of a bitch is dead, and nothing's going to stop your brother from being president now. And Nixon said Don Nixon said something to him, we owe you forever, or something like that, he said to Robert Mayhew. So that's just an interesting story. And again, I'm not suggesting that Nixon, Richard Nixon, was involved. I'm suggesting, though, that, you know, Richard Helms looks at this as, hey, we put you in office, buddy. You know what I mean? We put you in office by taking out RFK, and here, you know, you're going to turn on us. We're going to turn on you.
Huh.
So this is where the blood feud with Helms and Nixon really get, you know, really gets going, because, you know, when Haldeman said that, when Nixon made this statement about the blowing up the whole Bay of Pigs thing, he went back to Richard Helms and told him, and Helms hit the roof. Helms told, he says, tell Nixon that the Bay of Pigs had nothing to do with this.
Wow.
And you make it very clear that we're not helping them at all. So that's where the blood feud went in.
Interesting.
You know, between the two of them.
Well, Sean, I think right there, let's take a break. Okay. Because we're kind of at that 45-minute mark, and I really want to take another, you know, like I said, our last half of that of our episode to really go into more detail. So let's take a quick break. Everybody refill your snack bowls. Get a refreshed drink on the way. You got to use the bathroom, use the bathroom. But hey, listen, we'll be right back, and so will you. So stay tuned. We're here with Sean Cain talking Watergate. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. As you know, we are here with Sean Cain, and today's episode, we're talking Watergate. Some really great stuff. Excuse me. Some really great stuff that we're talking about here with Shane. Sorry. Hang on, I got something in my throat.
You all right there, buddy?
Yeah. Yeah. Too much. I just inhaled too much wind.
Okay.
But yeah, no, sorry about that. Yeah, no, we're here with Sean. We're here. We're discussing some great details here about Watergate. And what we want to do is, we want to keep going into more detail now. We want to go back into where we left off. We heard some pretty different perspectives there and different stories. So Sean's going to pick back up. And Sean, where do we go now?
Well, the one thing I want to mention, I can't believe I left this guy out. But when I was going through all the White House plumbers and naming all the members, I forgot G. Gordon Liddy. I mean, how in the world do I forget G. Gordon Liddy? Maybe because he's the only one that didn't have any really CIA background. You know, he was an FBI counterintelligence operative. He was a lawyer and everything. But Liddy's a central figure in all of this, you know, corruption and everything. So I just want to mention him, and we'll go into a little bit more detail on him in a little bit. But I wanted to get into some of the dirty tricks by Richard Nixon.
Okay.
So I don't know if you ever heard Senator Eddie Muskie. Did you ever hear that name? Do you remember that name?
It's not a common one that I know.
No, well, he was a Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. He was a senator from Maine. He was the son of Polish immigrants. And he was a vice president candidate with Humphrey, I think, in 68. And he ran for president in 72. And Nixon's dirty tricks absolutely destroyed him. It was a letter that came to be known as the Canuck Letter. It was a forged letter to the press that said that Eddie Muskie held this prejudice against Americans of French-Canadian descent. And it was just all made up in lies. And just, it was just an awful letter, though. But it was the work of a guy by the name of Donald Segretti. I'm sure you heard that name, Segretti.
Yep.
He was Nixon's hatchet man.
Yep.
You know, he was the guy, you know, he was an attorney for Nixon, but he was a political operative. And he was the guy that Nixon turned to destroy his enemies, you know. And Muskie broke down, and this letter ruined him, and it just destroyed his run for president. And it was all lies. You know, it was a forged letter. And this isn't the first thing that Cingretti did. I mean, Cingretti, he faked letters accusing Senator Henry Scoop Jackson of having an illegitimate child with an underage girl. And that was totally not true. And he just destroyed the guy's reputation, you know what I mean? And he accused Henry Hubert Humphrey of sexual misconduct. And none of that was true. It was all, you know, a hatchet job by Cingretti. So that's just some of the Nixon's dirty tricks. Like, just he has guys like Cingretti around him all the time. And the nothing is below these guys, what they would do to destroy their enemies or just their rivals, you know?
Yeah. Just sounds like another guy to just pick up more and maybe bring up more controversy, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And one of the things I want to talk about, another dirty trick, was I don't know if you ever heard the name Anna Chenault, but she was a member of the U.S.-China lobby. She was married to a World War II general. What she did is she helped Nixon by seeking a delay in the Vietnam War peace negotiations, you know, when Nixon was running. Because, and basically screwing Johnson and Humphrey and anybody else on the Democratic side, because the General Chenault was the commander of the Flying Tigers. Mm-hmm. And then Anna Chenault became the vice president of Flying Tiger Line, which is a cargo airline that transported U.S. troops over to Vietnam. And she was born in China, so she had many connections, you know, in Southeast Asia. And she basically, you know, had the negotiations in Vietnam. She had them stalled until Richard Nixon could become president on behalf of Richard Nixon. So that's just another one of his dirty tricks.
Wow.
That, yeah.
Never heard of that one, though.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, in the whole thing, while this is all going on, Operation Chaos and Operation COINTELPRO, which we mentioned before.
Right.
And we'll mention Chaos and we'll mention COINTELPRO when we do the Manson episode. But this whole thing is going on. It's basically a domestic espionage operations to destroy the left wing.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And it was established by Johnson, but it was expanded by Richard Nixon. And it was basically launched by Richard Helms and James Angleton.
Wow.
And, of course, Hoover, you know. So all this is going on, you know, and Nixon, that's part of Nixon's dirty tricks, too, because he had a lot to do with pushing that to destroy his enemies on the left. But the whole time when this is going on, J. Edgar Hoover dies. I forget exactly when he died, but all his secret files, Hoover's secret files, were confiscated by James Angleton, the chief of counterintelligence. And Angleton had a history of doing this. Like, every time an important figure would pass away, he would send a team down to the person's office and to his home and get all his private records and everything and confiscate everything, basically.
Yeah.
So can you imagine, like, James Angleton, who has dirt on everybody, Hoover has dirt on everybody, and here's Angleton. He gets in possession of Hoover's secret files. It's just unbelievable.
Sounds like he's the benefactor. Holy God.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus.
And then another thing that the White House plumbers were doing, it was called Operation Sapphire, and this was an entrapment. They were trying to trap the Democrats with a prostitution ring, and this was proposed by G. Gordon Liddy, you know, in... the CIA activate this, and Nixon approved this. Like, here's the thing that drives me crazy is when people try to defend Richard Nixon that he didn't know about any of this stuff. Now, I'm not arguing that Helms hijacked a lot of this for his own benefit, because I really believe all these guys were still working for Helms. But the thing is, Nixon, none of these guys would do anything without Nixon's approval. As far as his staff, like Haldeman and John Mitchell and Colson and all these guys, I mean, Nixon knew about all this shenanigans that was going on with the plumbers unit. So who's he kidding and who's his defenders kidding? You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yep. No, absolutely.
And then another interesting figure in this whole thing is a private investigator by the name of Lou Russell. Now, he's kind of reminds me of Robert Mayhew. He's one of them guys that's out of the books, you know, kind of buried deep in the office of security. But one of the things is that there's a lot of information now that he was present at the burglary that night. But that's something that's never, ever brought up. It's never been confirmed. But a couple of the Cubans did say that Russell was there. And Russell was very close. He worked for Richard Helms. So what was Lou Russell doing there?
Right.
I don't know. But Russell was involved in a lot of the White House plumbers, but he was kind of off the books. You know, he's another one that's buried deep into the Office of Security.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so, because I'm trying to think, too. I mean, that name's not ringing a bell.
No, I'm not surprised because it's been a hidden name.
Okay.
He's one of them guys that you know, got lost in history.
Okay.
You know,
makes sense.
Yeah. And the thing is, he was really close to Helms. So, you know, and this whole thing is like, we're going to get into more of this. Like, the paranoia was just unbelievable. Nixon created, you know, you have the CIA and the we're going to get into the military, and then you have Rockefeller and Kissinger. I mean, they're all going at it. I mean, Angleton called Kissinger a Soviet spy. I mean, just, and this is an environment, though, that was created by Richard Nixon. You know, he created this paranoid environment.
Okay.
But the one thing I want to touch on is the Deep Throat character.
Deep Throat, yep.
Yeah, so it came out that it was Mark Felt was Deep Throat. And to be honest with you, I there's no doubt that Felt did give some information to Woodward, but I don't believe that Deep Throat was one character. I really don't. Like, there's a lot of things in there. Like, just the way, you know, it seems to me like, you know, Woodward kind of just pumped it up. Like, the way they met in a garage and secluded alleys and stuff. And it just doesn't make sense to me because, you know, a lot of the things, like Woodward said that Felt would leave his plant. I forget, he would leave his plant in the window of his apartment building.
Yeah.
And every time he would walk by, he would see that plant, he would know to meet in the garage. Well, the problem with that is that Felt lived in, like, a blind alley. So you would actually have to walk down through this blind alley and then see the plant and then turn around and come back the other way. Like, nobody would look at that suspicious as Woodward every day walking down this blind alley. You know what I mean? So that just never made sense to me. And the fact is that the information Felt had at the FBI, a lot of this stuff was actually information that the FBI probably wouldn't have had. And I think it had to come from the CIA. And that's where I think Helms manipulated a lot of this. So I think, like I said before, I think Woodward was getting his information from other intelligence assets and sources that he had his years in Navy intelligence. So I don't think the Deep Throat character was just one guy named Mark Felt.
I mean, that's plausible. I mean, I could definitely believe that, because just to think that it's one man operating under that, that incognito presence, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I could definitely see where multiple entities would take, you know, take charge and take place of Deep Throat, you know?
Right.
And it's just, like I said, it's a plausible theory, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, Deep Throat did tell Woodward, you know, that the cover-up had little to do with the last Watergate burglary. It was mainly to protect the covert operations of the U.S. government.
Yeah.
You know, and there are two books that are, I think, are really good on this. One is called Secret Agenda.
Yeah.
By a guy by the name of Jim Hogan.
Okay.
And another one is Dirty Tricks, obviously a great title, by Shane O'Sullivan. And these two guys did a lot of great work and really, a lot of the information I'm telling to tonight came from the research those two guys did.
So I'm guessing these books really, they heavy pile on Nixon, right?
Oh, they heavy pile on Nixon, and they also Richard Helms, though. They don't, like I said, they both of the, you know, they think it was a blood feud between Helms and Nixon, and Nixon, the White House plumbers, yeah. You know, Nixon set it up for Dirty Tricks and this and that, but Helms also hijacked a lot of it, and he was running black operations through it. Like I said before, these guys are not ex-CIA. They're still working for Richard Helms. Now, the Nixon has his people, you know, running through. And I think G. Gordon Liddy was one of them that was 100% loyal to Richard Nixon. Where I think McCord, Hunt, Lou Russell, some of these other guys, their loyalty goes to Richard Helms.
Okay.
So this is where you had this, you know, this big feud. And then, you know, you have Kissinger in there. You know, in Angleton and all these guys, like, there was just so much mistrust with Nixon and you know, that he created.
Yeah.
I mean, he created this mess, you know, and we could say that Helms took him out eventually, but, you know, he fell for the trap, but he created this paranoia.
Interesting. And yeah. You know, it's kind of funny because, like, now, like, Dirty Tricks, you know, just that title alone makes me think, and maybe it does for other people too. When you hear that, you're thinking of Nixon. But literally, I'm thinking in my head here, dirty tricks. There's only two people that come to mind when we talk about that. That's Richard Nixon and Ric Flair, WWF Hall of Famer. You know, well, the dirtiest, yeah. Right? They're dirtiest.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So that's where I think about that. So I had to share that as a little pop
culture.
Yeah,
that's good. That's good.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, there's just some more stuff. You know, E. Howard Hunt, in his safe, he had a lot of interesting things in his safe. He had a CIA profile of Daniel Ellsberg, of course, and he had material on Chad Aquipic. Of course, we know the history of Chad Aquipic with Teddy Kennedy. But he had documentation that Hunt and Sturgis were in the area that night. Now, that's a rabbit hole I don't really want to go down right now, but just to me, the fact that Hunt and Sturgis were in the area that night of the accident tells me that there might be a little bit more to that than we know about.
Yep. Oh, and real quick, correction on that. I think I said WWF. See, I'm thinking back way.
NWO, you're thinking.
Yeah, thinking way past the
NWA, the old NWA.
Yeah, he's a WWE Hall of Famer. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Just in case I get unless I get rattled by the wrestling fans. So, but no, go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Make that correction.
Well, he also had real and bogus documentation of State Department cables on JFK with the assassination of ZM and his brother. And this is what I talked about earlier, where they try to blame, they wanted to put the blame. That was a CIA assassination, and they wanted to blame that on JFK. So he had all that in a safe. He had a classified section of the Pentagon Papers that was never released. He had a couple handguns in there. Boy, would I like to get the ballistics on them. I could just imagine.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just some of the interesting things he had. But he also had information. He had files on sexual relations of White House staff. And that's interesting. And he was sending in Howard Hunt, who was a lifetime Republican and really a right-wing extremist. He was sending this back to Richard Helms, and that's a fact. And he was also sending that to members of the Democratic Party, which is interesting. So this is where this feud with Nixon and the CIA really, you know, the CIA was spying on Nixon. Like, they eventually, you know, this blood feud really became pretty bad between
them. It seems like the tension keeps on getting tighter, you know?
Oh, it does.
No, it does, just from the descriptions here, because, like, it's one thing leading to another. You know?
And then, of course, after Nixon resigns, Gerald Ford takes over.
Yep.
And who's Gerald Ford's vice president? Nelson Rockefeller.
Rockefeller. Yep.
And George Bush, who becomes president, or he becomes head of the CIA.
Yep.
I mean, we talked about Prescott Bush, his father. You know, his involvement in all of this. And then, you know, of course, Bush brings in Rumsfeld and Cheney, and we know what damage they did down the road.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just interesting. But, you know, that memo on Hunt and Sturgis and Chad Aquipic, that's something that I'd like to look into more.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Oh, definitely.
But it just goes to show you the paranoia. And then the paranoia actually gets worse because a lot of people don't know about this part about Watergate. But during the Watergate hearings, they learned that David Young, who, of course, you know, is a Rockefeller guy, and the Plumbers Unit, they were investigating a military spy ring. Okay, and the Senate found out about this, and they convened the secret hearings under the Committee of the Armed Services.
Right.
And this became known as the Moore-Radford affair. Radford was an aide to Admiral Moore, chairman of the Joint Chief of Staffs. And then Radford testified that Henry Kissinger's foreign policy was catastrophic by design.
Right.
He was saying that the military spying activities were to combat a conspiracy conceived by the Rockefellers in the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a Rockefeller creation, that was implemented by Henry Kissinger. And the whole purpose of this was to win Soviet cooperation and guaranteeing the Rockefellers' continued domination over the world's currency and to create a one-world government, which they called the New World Order. So, there's the ghost of Alan Dulles and the shadow of David Rockefeller involved in this. But, you know, what happened at this secret hearing? I mean, the files haven't been released, but, boy, would I like to get my hands on those. I mean, you know, here you have the White House plumbers, you know, spying on the military spying on Nixon, Kissinger, and Rockefeller. I mean, this stuff is just unbelievable. Like, and, again, it's the paranoia created 100% by Richard Nixon.
Right. Yep. No, and you know what? Kind of funny because if you, I'm gonna ask you something later in the episode once we get towards the end, because I want to save it towards question time. But I feel like I think we're circling a wagon here. There's something, because I have something that I want to ask you personally, and then I also have a question that came last night at, you know, obviously, I call it a last minute question, but we're definitely going to circle the wagon on this.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm just, there's a couple more things I just want to, you know.
Oh, yeah, please.
That before we get into that final break-in, like I just really think it was sabotaged by Hunt McCord, and it was, you know, to embarrass Nixon. Now, I don't know if they could have foreseen, even the greatest CIA operations, they could have foreseen that this would lead to everything it led to, like Nixon. But I just think as time went on and Nixon just kept falling more and more in for the trap, that they eventually just took him out. But it was also to protect a lot of the stuff that was going on, and a lot of these operations, like, you know, that prostitution ring that they were trying to trap the Democrats in. And there was just a concern that Jeb Magruder and Liddy was, you know, their assault on the Democratic National Convention. I think the Helms and these guys were concerned that was going to, risk their operations that they had running inside the plumbers unit, because the thing that I never understood about why they even targeted that is that O'Brien, the chairman, he didn't even use that office anymore. He was using an office down in Florida.
Okay.
So what in the world were they actually looking for in O'Brien's office? Like, that's one thing I just could never understand.
Okay.
You know, but then everything goes crazy. Like, after Nixon resigns and everything, and then Helms is actually replaced. Nixon actually replaces Helms. And we talked about when Kennedy fired Dulles. I mean, he's still the head of the intelligence community. So, and Helms ends up being ambassador to Iran after that. And we talked about Iran before. It's interesting that Iran comes up with Bobby Kennedy with the Sabak, the Iranian intelligence, how they were investigating Rockefeller. And then we know everything that happens in Iran down the road with the hostages. So Helms is right in the middle of that mess. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole now. But after that, Angleton is actually replaced.
Okay.
Finally, after 25 years, the chief of counterintelligence. And the thing is, you know, he ends up organizing some organization that was similar to David Atlee Phillips, retired intelligence operatives or something. So Angleton didn't get out of the game. You know, he lost the title,
well,
but he was still...
I was just going to say, he lost the title, but, I mean, you're still looking at a guy that's got a stockpile of information on people.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then it doesn't matter, because who's in there? George Bush is in there as CIA director.
Uh-huh.
His ties are, you know, to Rockefeller and you know,
yep,
obviously his father and everything. But you know, and then Patrick Gray, the FBI director, he ends up destroying all the contents that I mentioned before that was in Hunt's safe. John Dean ends up shredding all of Hunt's operational diary that he had.
Okay.
Helms erases some of the CIA-controlled the central taping system that they had, that they were taping on Nixon's cabinet. And then I also mentioned in an earlier episode how we destroyed all the MKUltra files. So these guys were just shredding all the evidence. Like, this is, you know, how is this not obstruction? You know, and it just, you know, just sum it up. Watergate was just, it was over a year of dirty tricks by Nixon and illegal black ops by the CIA. And you know, when those two things collided, you had that blood feud with Helms. And Nixon.
Yeah.
And McCord wrote, you know, he wrote a note to his White House contact that if Helms was ever removed, then every tree in the forest is going to fall.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened, you know. And it's just amazing when you get into all this stuff, like the plumbers are spying on the military spying on Nixon. I mean, Kissinger doesn't trust Nixon. I mean, it's Rockefeller doesn't trust Nixon. I mean, Helms is obviously going at it with him. I mean, it's just, there's just so much to Watergate past that last burglary that everybody thinks that's what Watergate's all about.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, but like I said, I'm not defending Richard Nixon. I mean, his dirty tricks was just the stuff he was doing, the way he destroyed Eddie Muskie and you know, the accusations, the stuff he had Segretti doing. And then, you know, just all the everybody associated with him went to jail. I mean, even before Watergate, I mean, Spiro Agnew, who was vice president, he went to jail.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, this was just such a corrupt cabinet. It's just unbelievable. And again, we wouldn't have had any of this nonsense if Robert Kennedy was not assassinated. Because Richard, there's no doubt in my mind, if RFK is not assassinated, Richard Nixon does not become president of the United States. Sure. Now, Richard Helms was never going to allow Robert Kennedy to be president, so, you know.
Right.
That's another issue, but.
Okay.
Again, that's pretty much all I had. I mean, you know, there's more I could have went into, but there's just, you know, the thing is, any of these subjects, you could go down a rabbit hole and just, I mean, it's just, you know, that secret hearing with the military and the Committee of the Armed Services, I would just love to know what was said at that hearing.
You'd like to be the fly on the wall for that one.
Oh, God. I mean, I just could imagine.
Yep.
But you see how the even though Alan Dulles is dead, his ghost, you know, the structure that he created.
His presence is still there.
Pass the torch. Oh, yes. And especially through Richard Helms.
Yep.
You know, that was his protege.
So here's the thing. I mean, I don't know if we're at this point where we could explain it, but so, I mean, what really, so like the spearhead of this is, of, you know, we think of Watergate, we talk about these details, right? We're talking about Richard Nixon. So what is the, I guess for everybody out there, the listeners, right? I'm not a crook. You know, what is this signifying? What is I'm not a crook all about?
Well, that's a complete fabrication. I mean, he, of course he's a crook. I mean, everything he did, I mean, he, there's no doubt he obstructed justice. I mean, when he goes to Helms and tells Helms, you better destroy this investigation.
Right.
I mean, that's obstruction of justice right there.
So that's where we get the saying, I'm not a crook, because he obstructs justice.
And the whole, I mean, when you think about the whole setup of the plumber's unit, I mean, that whole thing is illegal. I mean, you're plugging leaks. I mean, you're, you know, and the way they went about it, you know, the break-ins, we talked about, they were successful. I think there was like five or six break-ins. They were just, I know they were successful into the Watergate Hotel at least once, maybe twice. They were successful in breaking into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist. I mean, so you're talking about illegal burglaries, that, and there's no doubt they're sanctioned by Nixon.
Yeah.
You know, so for him to say, you know, I'm not a crook, that's just unbelievable. But I also, you know, I didn't really get into too much. I wish I got into more about how Kissinger and Nixon really had a feud, too, because they didn't trust each other. And there's so much mistrust that Nixon, he's just created such a paranoia throughout his whole cabinet. I mean, Helms and him ended up hating each other. I mean, Kissinger didn't trust him. I mean, you know, you have the shadow of David Rockefeller. He don't trust Nixon anymore, and he created Nixon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And you know, the CIA, they're spying. I mean, Hunt and McCord, are they really working for Nixon, or are they working for Richard Helms? I mean,
right.
I think they never left the CIA.
Yep.
I mean, they're under the Confidential Correspondent Group under the Office of Security. They're still working. But again, Nixon set this plumber's unit up. So you can't say that it's all Richard Helms. I mean, Nixon set this up. So there's just so much. And then the interesting, you know, when we talked about H.L. Haldeman, and he talked about, you know, that code word. There's no doubt in my mind that was a code word. The Bay of Pigs was a code word for the Kennedy assassination. I mean, Richard Nixon sent in a message to Helms, hey, we know that you and Dulles took out JFK, and he says, if you're not going to help me squash this investigation, I'm going to bring you down in that. And then the whole thing with E. Howard Hunt is blackmailing Nixon. What does Nixon do? He says, pay him off. He says, well, this man knows too much. We have to pay him off. I mean, so to say I'm not a crook, I mean, come on.
I'm telling you, I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of people will look at Richard Nixon and it's like, yeah, let's fast forward past that because it's, you know, I mean, at least from conversations I've had with presidents, I mean, Richard Nixon isn't one that we you just talk about Watergate and that's it. I mean, people say, okay, it was a scandal. He was a crook, blah, 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 blah. It just gets very generic and it just gets like what we're doing. We're going into detail. We're not just having a general discussion and the make fun of, you know?
But how about the stuff he had Segretti doing? I mean, Segretti destroyed Muskie. He went after Henry Jackson. I mean, he went after Hubert Humphrey. I mean, he's making up all these lies to say somebody had an illegitimate child with an underage girl. I mean, it's just
conflicts.
Unbelievable, this stuff. You know, and this is all directed by Nixon.
Yep. And, you know, one thing I want to actually, you know, before we conclude our episode here tonight, because I know we still have questions to get to, so that's going to be important to get to, but you know, one story that I want to add on to here with you, Sean, is, like, did you ever hear of the role of Richard Nixon in, well, obviously we're talking a little bit about it, but the role of Richard Nixon and George Bush and the assassination of President Kennedy.
Yeah, you know what I did. I don't think, like I said, I don't think Nixon had any involvement. I think Nixon knew,
yeah,
because he was created by the same guys. And as far as George Bush, like George Bush's ties, obviously to Rockefeller and Dulles.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, you know, I've seen a lot, and I heard about that picture that George Bush was in Dallas, and
yep,
and there's some weird George Bush. I mean, Bush was, he actually, remember we talked about George the Mournshell,
right?
George the Mournshell ended up, when Gaetan Fonzie gives his card to him,
yeah,
to his daughter, and the daughter gives the card to the Mournshell, he goes up and blows his head off with a shotgun. Well, before that, he made a call to Langley, and he made a call to George Bush, because they were really close. So there is some ties, but I don't see evidence that Bush was,
you know, the only
Bush was involved in that. I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason I bring it up is because I remember reading back, I don't know, it might have been a couple years ago, but it was something about a newly discovered document that the FBI revealed, and it claimed that it had direct involvement of the 1963 murder of Kennedy, and it just pretty much, from what I remember out of it, I remember them circulating around. You know, it was a famous CIA agent. I think it was Felix Rodriguez. And
Felix Rodriguez was really close to George Bush.
Yeah,
yes.
And he was recruiting right-wing Cubans. Right.
Yes.
Right,
right out of these same guys we talked about,
right,
Eugenio,
right,
Martinez, Virgilio,
right,
Gonzalez.
Yep,
yes.
The safe crackers. The research.
Well,
you know, like
what you're talking about, Matt, is Operation 40. Operation 40 was Nixon. Nixon was vice president.
So see, this does make sense. This, okay,
it does,
okay,
make,
okay,
sense.
Okay,
it
this,
does make sense.
So this
Nixon,
does make sense.
Nixon,
okay.
Nixon was the vice president, and when Operation 40 was set up, and Bush was heavily involved in that. Bush ran a company called Zapata Oil, and of course, Zapata was the code name for the Bay of Pigs.
Huh.
Operation Zapata.
Okay.
So, I mean, Bush, yeah, Bush does have a lot of ties to that, but I just don't, like, direct involvement into the Kennedy assassination, I just don't see,
okay,
it. I just see, like, he was connected to a lot of guys that were involved.
Okay.
If you really want to connect something to Bush, I mean, I would look into the attempted assassination on Reagan, because Hinckley was family friends with the Bushes.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No, I never knew that.
And Hinckley's name is in the MK Ultra files.
You know, I'm just kind of Googling here because, you know, hey, we're on the internet. And,
yeah,
you know, I just typed that in about George Bush. And one thing that comes up and says here that, I don't know if you ever heard of this, but is it called the Zapruder film?
Zapruder film.
Is that?
The Zapruder film.
Okay, so there's maybe that's something I'll look into. But, yeah, it said that Bush was in Texas. He denied knowing exactly where he was at the time.
Well, he was actually, yeah, he did deny. Him and Nixon are probably the only two guys in the world that didn't know where they were that day. They gave like three different.
Yeah.
But Bush was most likely in Houston.
Yeah.
And he there was some strange stuff with Bush. But again, I just, like I said, I think he's connected to all these guys. And again, his father, Prescott, was tied to Alan Dulles and David Rockefeller. So, I mean, you know, he definitely knows what happened. You know, and there's just some weird stuff. There's also, I don't know if you ever seen the tape of the eulogy he gave with President Ford. Did you ever see that?
No.
When Gerald Ford died, and when Bush said that, he says something about JFK was assassinated. They called on Gerald Ford and the Warren Commission to say that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, and he kind of smiled when he did it.
Right.
It's just kind of a goofy smile. Like, I don't know what to make it out. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of people that think Bush was involved, but yeah. I honestly don't see. I think there's a lot of other things you could get on George Bush.
Well, I'm sure.
I mean, he's no saint by any means.
I'm sure. I've heard that many times, not just from family, but I've heard that many times by other people about how, you know, there's some snaky business there with George Bush. And we're not talking George W. I'm talking George Bush Sr. You're talking George Bush Sr., right?
Yes,
yeah.
I'm talking senior.
Yep. So
yes, and his father Prescott was a very powerful senator. He never became president, but he was tied very tightly with Rockefellers and with Dulles.
See how the Rockefellers keep coming back?
Oh, they're in everything.
God,
I mean, there's you can't mention anything without mentioning the Rockefellers. You know
I'm
what I mean?
You,
and even Dulles. I mean,
it's hilarious. Like I
yeah.
You know, I can't stand it. It's just like hearing Alan Dulles. You know?
Yeah, their name constantly comes up. I mean, even MK Ultra, I mean, the whole thing was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation.
They're,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing. Like, everything, they're just involved in everything.
Man.
You know, and it's true to connection of Alan Dulles. That's, you know, where I talked about that pyramid, where Rockefeller's on the top, but Dulles is right in the middle of that. And the connection with Rockefeller and Dulles, I mean, it goes back to Dulles's uncle was a guy by the name of Robert Lansing, who basically raised Allen Dulles.
Yeah.
Well, he was connected to David Rockefeller's grandfather, J.D. Rockefeller, started the whole dynasty.
Yeah.
You know, and the Rockefellers and Dulles, they consider themselves cousins. I think they're linked through marriage somehow. I forget, but they call themselves cousins, but they go back generations.
Okay.
You know, so.
Well,
yeah.
Let me ask.
So there's
no.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Let me ask. I was gonna say, where do we go next? I mean, do we have anything
additional to
piggyback on here? Or?
Not really. I mean, there's some stuff I left out that, you know, I just sometimes you go down these rabbit holes, you might get stuck there forever. You know,
yeah.
There's so much information on this, but I think we got the gist of it. I think, you know, like I said, to sum it up, Watergate was, you know, it wasn't just about, it was about years and years of just a corrupt, paranoid, dirty tricks by a president. And CIA black operations, secret operations that were being run. And, you know, when those two things collided and the people that put Richard Nixon in office started to distrust him with good reason because he was acting so paranoid. He was distrusting them and they were distrusting him. And it was just a mess. And when those two things collided, I think this is what ended up, you know, happening at the end of Watergate there.
Yeah.
You know, and that led to you know, Ford becoming president and Nelson Rockefeller vice president and George Bush CIA director.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's...
And Kissinger's still there. Kissinger was still there, and that's interesting. Down the road, Kissinger and Nelson Rockefeller would end up advising Jimmy Carter in the whole Iran mess down there.
Was that the Iran-Contra or something?
Before Iran-Contra. Right? I mean, that no. involved in that, but that's a whole other rabbit hole. I'm talking about the hostages.
Okay.
There was actually a point where Carter said to, and a lot of people don't notice, but Carter said to Nelson Rockefeller and Kissinger, he said, what are you guys going to advise me to do when they storm our embassy and take our people hostage? And Rockefeller laughed, and he said, that's never going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. So why in the world Jimmy Carter is taking advice from them guys? I mean, I don't know. But it's the whole thing is just crazy.
Well, I think at this point...
But
go ahead.
One last thing. You know what? I do want to add one last thing. I think if, you know, a lot of times like... I like to judge on the person. I don't really like to affiliate with a party and stuff. But if you really want to know if a person's just basing everything on, you know, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, just ask them what they think of Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson. You know, if it's a Democrat, ask them their opinion of Lyndon Johnson. And if it's a Republican, ask them what they think of Richard Nixon. If they say anything good about either one of them guys, then you're dealing with somebody who just sees party lines and nothing else. You know, like they're not gonna be persuaded by anything you tell them. They're just gonna vote the party, and that's it. And they're not gonna look at the person,
sure,
the individual.
Yep. Because I mean, listen, I get that. I've gotten so many people. You know, when we talk about politics, they just try to divert it. And you know what? They don't wanna hear something. They just wanna. You know what? I'm gonna go in, and I'm just gonna fill in my circle. That's it.
And that's
I
it.
I don't need to hear that crap. And honestly, I wish it would be a little bit more. I wish there would be more discussion and more dialogue. But, hey, you just can't talk to some people, you know?
Yeah.
I get it. I believe me, I've gotten some brutal, some nasty conversations in politics. And I try to avoid
it,
you know?
I try to avoid it, too. Like, I try to look at the history of it. And I try to judge everybody on the individual.
Yeah.
And on the evidence, on the declassified documents and the stuff we know now that came out 20, 30, 40 years after the fact.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So if you want to take one last break and then come back with some questions.
Yeah, you know, I felt that that's a well-needed point. I was thinking the same thing here. So, listen, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back to some question time here with Sean Kane. Again, great stuff. And, Sean, I mean, thank you so much for everything that's going on here. I mean,
thank you, Matt, for having me.
This has been a hell of a topic. And like even last week, I can't wait to do more episodes. So let's take that quick break. Again, we'll be right back. Sit tight. All right. Well, we are coming to the concluding point of our episode here with the Garlic Jar Podcast Show. Again, let us just remind you that we are here talking Watergate today with Sean Kane. Great guest. He's been on the show here doing numerous episodes with us, and you might know him especially from our JFK assassination series, more notably now from last week when we had the RFK assassination episode, which has been doing, superb. You're crushing record books over here with the podcast. And it's not just Podomatic stats.
Great to hear.
Yeah, it's not just Podomatic stats. I mean, we're looking at... I mean, it's cool to see all the downloads come in from over the application. So, like, what we're talking about is, you know, people could find us on Amazon. They could find us on Google Podcasts. They could find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So, if you guys haven't checked us out, make sure you go to those platforms, download us, give us a like, give us a comment, whatever you want to do. And, of course, if you ever have anything to email us, questions, concerns, comments, you could always get us at garlicjarmedia@gmail.com. Jenna is actually off today, so in case anybody was wondering where she is, she's actually working. She had some other obligations to take care of, but she will be with us next week when we start working with our new episode on cult classics, so I'm excited for that.
Jenna's a hard worker.
She is. I'm telling you. She is.
It was a little strange doing a show without her.
I know, right? I felt a little emptiness. I did.
Yeah, she's great.
Well, we got to give her that shout-out. We got to give her the aloha. So we're thinking...
Definitely.
Hey, Jen... All right, so, Sean, where do we go right now? I think we have questions, right?
Yeah, you had one question, I believe.
Yeah, and this actually comes from a friend of mine, Matt. So, real quick, let me just pull it up.
Okay.
So, Matt is asking us, if you don't think Saran Saran was the shooter, who do you think the shot came from killing RFK?
Well, I said before, Eugene Thayne Caesar, there's no doubt he was the only person in position to take that headshot.
Okay.
And that's according to the pathologist. He's the one that said it was point blank range and Caesar was behind RFK and he was in position to take that shot.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. But I do think, and this is something that I left out of the RFK podcast, but there was other people that I think there was a team there. It wasn't just I think Sirhan was a distraction, and I think Caesar was the main shooter. But I think there was other shooters because, again, remember, there was so many other people that were injured. There were four other people that were shot.
Oh, yeah, we're not just talking about one person.
And the thing is, Caesar wasn't in position to take those shots on the other people. Like, the shots came from the other direction. So I think I mentioned the guy by the name of Michael Wayne. He was the guy that was seen with the girl in the polka dot dress and Sirhan.
Yeah.
And he was also seen with Caliber Khan, who was investigating the case that night.
Right.
You know, he was investigating Dulles and Rockefeller, and he ended up at the Ambassador Hotel. But Michael Wayne was arrested, leaving the scene. A lot of people thought he had a gun on him.
Right.
And, of course, he was brought in, and the two intelligence officers that were running the investigation, Peña and Hernandez, they totally, squashed anything involvement by Wayne. They let him go. And the one thing we know now is that he had a card on him by a name by the name of Keith Gilbert. And he was a right-wing white supremacist militant. He was in the Minutemen.
Huh.
And he had a direct connection to Robert Mayhew. Mayhew used him on a lot of different operations. So there's a connection, Wayne, to Gilbert, to Mayhew. And I already said that I think Mayhew was running the operation. But I also think that David Morales was probably the guy on the ground. We talked about David Morales. He was at the CIA, was at the JM Wave Station. And Shane O'Sullivan, the guy that I mentioned that wrote the book Dirty Tricks, he did a lot of investigation, and he found pictures of Morales at the Ambassador Hotel and evidence that he was there. And remember, Morales, I mentioned on one of our earlier podcasts that Morales confessed in a drunken stupor that, he was there when JFK was assassinated, and he was in L.A. when they got the, in his words, the son of a bitch and brother.
Yeah.
You know, and another guy that was arrested at the scene was a guy by the name of John Curry, who was a CIA asset. It wasn't released until later, but he was from Lebanon, and he was arrested. And Captain Brown and the LAPD documentation that he met with Goliath. Now, Goliath is the police department intelligence. That's their code name for the CIA. And then after that, he was released. And, of course, Peña and Hernandez had no... interest in investigating Curry at all. So they let him go. And the interesting thing about Curry is he was recruited into the CIA by our old friend David Atlee Phillips, who was running the Lebanon office in 57 when he recruited Curry.
Huh.
So that's the team I think that was put in place. Caesar, Michael Wayne, Curry. I think Morales was on the ground there supervising it. And, you know, once RFK says, you know, it's off to Chicago, let's win there, the whole thing is green lighted and the assassination takes place.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe Matt was expecting us to hear maybe the polka dot dress lady, you know.
Well, I wish I could tell you who that was, but I mean, well, 50 years later, nobody could identify who that was. We know, you know, there's pictures of her and stuff, but there's not really a good shot where you could get facial recognition.
Yeah.
And there's witnesses, but I said the best witness to her was Sandra Serrano, who was totally destroyed by Peña and Hernandez. Like, they totally, you know, they made her out to be, you know, just a useless witness, and she was a great witness. She seen the girl in the polka dot dress with Michael Wayne and with Sirhan.
That was the one in the documentary, wasn't it? The one that was interviewed.
Yes.
She was the one that said, "I saw this lady."
Yes, yeah. Sandra Serrano.
Cause
yes,
because didn't they say we shot Robert?
Well, when they came out, the girl in the polka dot dress said we shot. Something to effect. We shot the senator, something like that.
Yeah.
Or no, we shot him. We got him.
Yeah,
something like that.
Something like that, yep.
And then when Serrano says, "Who'd you get?" she was saying, Senator Kennedy's down or something like that. But the thing is, there was other witnesses that said that she had some kind of earpiece in. So, you know, she probably was talking to whoever's on the end of that earpiece, not saying that to Senator Serrano.
Not saying it to Serrano.
But Serrano didn't know that, you know what I mean? But she was a great witness. She seen the girl. She identified Michael Wayne. And again, Michael Wayne was a big-time suspect. He was let go. Caesar was let go. They would never investigate. They never even did ballistics on Caesar's gun that we know he was carrying.
Yep.
And he ended up lying about that gun, he you know, and all kind of other stuff.
Shake it off and sweep it under the rug.
You know, the other thing is, you know, Curry's released. I mean, none of this was ever investigated because, again, the intelligence community, Peña and Hernandez, squashed the investigation. They had their man, Sirhan. And that was it. Open and shut.
Yep.
And now everybody, all the people that I named, they trace back to Robert Mayhew. Of course, he's buried in the Office of Security, the CIA.
Yep.
So.
How about anything else?
That's the only thing I do want to add is, you know, when I mentioned last time about possibly doing an episode on the mob, boy, my phone's been blowing up. A lot of people, there's just a lot of interest in the mob. A lot of people excited about, you know, and me and you talked off the air, maybe doing something like a series on that, because I don't think you could do it in one show.
Okay.
You know, and there's so much interest in that. It's unbelievable.
No, and that's something we're going to bring you back on, because we are going to organize episodes so that we could get that topic going. And I think another thing, too, is that we got to also address that, you know, you're going to be joining us for an episode here about Martin Luther King. And we're also going to be having an episode in August coming up about the Manson murders.
Yes.
So let's just kind of advertise that right now, because we have you on right now for the podcast show. This isn't your last rodeo. You will be coming back for future episodes.
Well, thanks for having me, buddy. I really enjoy coming on, and thank you and Jenna for bringing me on.
Yeah, no, we love it. So is there anything else that we have to address? Any more questions?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, I think Watergate is such an interesting topic, and I think we covered a lot of good areas tonight, but, you know, there's so many unanswered questions. You know, what was on that 18 minutes that Nixon erased, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what was he really talking about in that reference to Bay of Pigs? I mean, there's just so many different things. I mean, you know, in McCord and Hunt, who were they really working for, Helms? I mean, did they really sabotage that last, you know, burglary on purpose? I really think they did, because there's so many mistakes made on that wasn't made on the other successful burglaries. And these are guys that don't make mistakes
right
very often.
All right. Well, I think if that's the case, we have nothing else to conclude on, Sean. We're gonna wrap it up here. We're gonna say goodbye. But again, it's not a permanent goodbye. We will be having future episodes. So stay tight and stay tuned with us. Thanks for listening to the Garlic Jar Podcast Show. And again, tune in to next week. Jenna and I will be coming back, and we will be doing the cult classic topic. So see you next week, guys. Everybody, have a good night. Thank you.